Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call, that we fondly call the internets.
You fondling the internet.
Is Joe Crazy Rider. How you doing today, Joe?
My ass is toasty warm.
Is that a good thing or a bad
thing? No, we will talk about it when we get to freaking.
You and your teases.
Or I know, ain't it? And you know what I'll probably do is when Corey and I first started, I gave him my whole big thing about having problems with my computer and how it ended up with a new printer. And I figure rather than repeat that, I'll just either have Corey cut that and just drop it right in that spot.
Well, Joe.
Or just use it as an opener, either way.
Joe?
Are you telling me we're going to open up Hot Comics North Korea finally?
No, I'm asking. Does Joe know? Yes, it comes out of nowhere. RKO out of nowhere. Does Joe know?
Hang on. Let me take off my pants. There we go. Much better. Okay.
When a Transformer dies, is it wrong to keep driving its corpse around since it is a functional vehicle? Is that disrespectful?
Which continuity?
Any of them.
Well, see, the thing is I don't think it actually works that way. But then again, I haven't. So all I know is a lot of times when in Transformers 4, when Spider-Man was all upset, yes, Spider-Man was briefly in the Transformer universe, that some of the Transformers died. Optimus Prime was spectacularly unconcerned because he was aware that Spider-Man does not realize that, you know, these guys can be repaired. Even Optimus came back a few times. I guess it's a matter of what continuity you're working in. Because I know in the Marvel one, you had to find the life spark inside them and snuff it out. Otherwise, you could just transfer it to another vehicle. Generally, though, when they died, there wasn't much left of the vehicle to drive anyways. So, and we did not, with the exception of the Junkions, we did not see Transformers like Borg, you know, harvesting parts off their fallen comrades to use into a new one. So, I don't know about the movies or even in IDW if they've since changed that. But for the most part, hey, if Bumblebee, you know, I actually met Bumblebee this weekend. He didn't want to talk to me. I'd drive him around, no problem.
All right. I actually have an answer from Dangerous Dan Moore as well.
Oh, cool.
Are you ready?
Sure.
Once rigor mortis sets in the joints, pistons, and whatever, it wouldn't move, so it wouldn't work. He then says, actual universe answer from the comic cartoon universes. Transformers energy comes from Energon in both modes. Energon is like their lifeblood. If they die, the Energon would not work in their system, so the vehicle mode would not work. It would be trying to make a circulatory system work after death.
So that's in the cartoon universe, or the animated, I guess you'd call
it. I also asked him about the moral implications of driving around the corpse, and he said, as for the moral implications, meh.
Doesn't bother them. I mean, it's not like they say, oh, I mean, they're certainly not squeamish about putting us inside them as we go driving around.
Well, yeah, is
which
that
led
sexual,
to a really
by
good,
the way?
Cartoon. Well, no, but it led to a really good Cartoon Network gag when they transformed inside. Oh, gross.
So there you go. Does Joe know?
I knew the Marvel comic book. I did not know the animated. Because really, with the exception of the movie, not many of them died in the animated show.
I'm also in comic news. I don't know if you've heard this yet, Joe. Stan Lee is free at last.
Free. Born free. So we won't have to pay to have him come to a future con like at MCBA Fall Con 2018, which will be October 6th. At the Edumacation building. Yes, the One Day Wonder's back. Tickets will go on sale September 1st. So I don't think any updates have happened yet, but they, when they do, they'll be at mcbacomiccons.com.
Actually, I went online last night, and Clifford Meth, who is he's a hero, by the way.
We need a hero!
He's the person who was able to get a pension for Dave Cockrum when Dave Cockrum was having medical issues as he went into his later years. He wrote the book Comic Book Babylon. He's working on Comic Book Babylon 2. He has worked with a lot of older creators to help them navigate legal issues. And last night on Facebook, he just put up a thing, Stan Lee is free at last. And when I saw that, it's like, oh, Stan finally died? But when you click on the comments, nope, Stan Lee's business manager was arrested yesterday. And I guess this is something that they have been working on for a while. Because I think we've all heard a little about, you know, Stan being being used, basically. And his business manager was arrested. They are digging into the financials. Stan has taken control of his Twitter and Facebook accounts, which, believe it or not, Stan Lee had nothing to do with those accounts for the past few years. And it's still a story in motion as we're talking on Wednesday night. But one of the things I hope comes out of it is that Stan won't do any more conventions, because the guy's 95. If you've seen pictures of him at conventions lately, he doesn't look good. He's exhausted. The people who know him say that he, you know, within an hour or so of getting at a convention, he just looks out of it. So maybe Stan's going to finally get some decent treatment and not be treated as poorly as he has been since his wife passed away. So, there, that good news, Joe. That's good news. You're not listening.
I'm listening.
I. That's the comic news that I have. Do you have any big news? Anything floating around? Anything you've read that you feel?
Well, that's what we're going to talk about, because we got box day, and so we'll talk about what we got in our boxes.
You know what other thing we haven't done in a long while, Joe?
Touch and Giggle Party.
Oh, no, I often have a touch and giggle party. I don't invite you because you giggle too loudly.
There is that.
No, American Foods. We haven't talked about American Foods in quite a while. I picked up a new American food. And I want to warn people. Now, Joe, do you remember a few years ago when they had the Doritos Roulette?
Not particularly.
The Doritos Roulette, one out of every 8 chips in the bag, was extra super hot. The others were just Cool Ranch. But one of them was really extra super hot. And the game was, you know, you would reach in, take a chip, take a bite, pass it on to the next person.
Take one down, pass it around.
Well, now they have put out a bag that's nothing but the extra super hot chips, Doritos Blaze. I was able to eat 7 chips before I drank about, you know, 3 glasses of milk and said I'm done. They are dangerous hot, to the point where I dare anybody to eat an entire bag without drinking milk. I dare you. Dare you.
I did have one piece of comic news, but I figured by now you probably had heard about it.
Oh, what's that?
Well, did you see Rocket Raccoon visited the St. Paul area?
Yes, he's got a new name. He's MPR Raccoon.
Yeah. Apparently, they took away his jetpack and everything, so he just climbed up a building, took a few naps, ate a few pigeon eggs, which I guess are okay for him. And finally, at 2 a.m. or so, made it to the top of one where he was captured and fed and I guess relocated to a suburb, because I guess we don't put up with raccoons in the city.
You don't much care for trash pandas in St. Paul? That surprises me. I know a few trash pandas who live in St. Paul.
Not to mention it was a she, but that's a different subject. So very, very confusing day for poor Rocket.
There was big news in comics. The triumvirate in charge of DC is now a duo.
Uh-oh. Who got deposed?
Jeff Johns.
Well there, kittens and caboodles. I'm afraid I have some bad news. That is the end of the recording that I made with Joe. No, it wasn't on purpose. It wasn't because I wanted Joe out of the show. It's because, the recording software that we used decided that, we'd talked enough. However, we continued to talk. Now, normally when this happens, we record on a Monday. And then it's, we'll record Tuesday. Or we'll record Wednesday. Well, because of various circumstances, we weren't able to record until Wednesday. And Joe worked Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday, Sunday. Oh, Sunday! When the podcast needs to be mixed and done. So, I went through all my options. I could take the episode of Solitaire Rose Radio that will be dropping on Wednesday, where I interview Bill Shelley, and put that up. But I think that Solitaire Rose Radio scratches a different itch. I could have brought in one of our pinch hitters, but I worked most of the weekend. So instead, what I'm going to do, I'm going to go through what Joe and I went through, but you're just going to get me. So it's kind of a weird special episode of Crazy Comics and Stories where Joe dropped out. What we discussed, we cut off with the news that Jeff Johns had given up his vice presidential position, his COO position, his whatever his position was, so that he could focus more on writing the Green Lantern Corps movie, as well as new comics, including the Three Jokers story that he's been talking about. So now, DC Comics is being run by Jim Lee and that guy who used to edit the X-Men, and Bob Harris. So Bob Harris is editor-in-chief and vice president of DC Comics. DC co-publishers are Jim Lee and Dan DiDio. So in a lot of ways, this is kind of the first time DC has had an editor-in-chief, which is a little unique. And Joe and I will talk about that in a future episode, because what we were talking about for this episode was we went through previews, and previews has switched up a little bit. DC has their own little DC previews magazine. Marvel has their own previews magazine. Image is still in previews, but they have their own magazine. And then previews shuffled some of the publishers around. So I'll talk about that a little bit, but we wanted to go through first the stuff in the Marvel book here, and Fantastic Four number 1 by Dan Slott and Sarah Pichelli has about a bajillion covers. And the one cover that jumps out at me, I haven't even looked to see what you need to do and who you need to sleep with to get a copy of it, is the two Art Adams covers. It's Art Adams wraparound covers for issues 1 and 2. And what it is, it's he takes the famous cover by Kirby for Fantastic Four number 100 and turns it into two covers by kind of extending out the edges. And Joe and I often talk about we wish Art Adams were doing actual comics rather than covers. But if we can't get him to do comics, this cover's pretty amazing. And also, we get a Fantastic Four poster by Jack Kirby that comes out as part of the celebration of Fantastic Four number 1. There's a Fantastic Four facsimile that's coming out. They're reprinting a lot of the trade paperbacks and some of the omnibuses. It's they're doing a big old push for the Fantastic Four. I think the creative team's going to be excellent. I think the series is going to be excellent. We'll see if this will bring the book back, because in the past, really, they've put top-notch creators on it, and it still hasn't really helped the sales. The sales have still let it be kind of in the midline of Marvel's books. There's also Infinity Wars by Gary Duggan and Mike Diodato Jr. that they're hyping. It's not really a crossover, but kind of is a crossover. It's really the Guardians of the Galaxy fed into all of these Infinity books, and I imagine when it's over, it'll come out as a Guardians of the Galaxy book. So that one looks interesting. Joe and I don't really buy a lot of the regular monthly books, and we really only talk about the stuff that jumps out at us as brand new. One of the things that I'm interested in is there is this X-Men book. This is the second month they've solicited it, and if you go to your previews thingamabob, you'll see with the X-Men book, you flip through, and then you get to one that is X-Classified. And the writer is classified, the artist is classified, the cover is classified, the variant cover is classified, and it says all will be revealed in June. And if I were a comic shop, I would not order many of these just because I don't want Marvel and DC getting in the habit of doing this. Now, I'm sure that they're going to announce all this information before the final order cutoff, because they would be stupid if they didn't. And it's probably, you know, some big thing that they didn't want to leak before the story began or whatever. But still, if you're a comic shop and you're ordering stuff sight unseen, I think it sets a bad precedent. I think it sets up for the comic publishers to be able to kind of pull stuff out of their butt. And if they're doing this where it's, hey, here's this book you need to order, can't tell you anything about it, though, God, how much would that suck? You're putting your money out there and having to deal with the fact that you don't know what you're ordering. Now we get to where Joe and I spend most of our money, and that is the trade paperbacks and hardcovers. There is a Marvel Universe by Frank Miller omnibus that reprints all the stuff that he did that was not from Daredevil. There is the second Marvel Universe by John Byrne omnibus, which, for the most part, it has, you know, onesie-twosie things, but it's also got his run on Iron Fist, which is all available as an epic collection in the back. For me, because it's kind of random and, you know, there's a lot of one-shot, short story, annuals, and everything. If you're a huge John Byrne fan, you should probably pick it up. But if you're not, go pick up that the Iron Fist book that's one of the epic collections, because it reprints the entire run of Iron Fist from Marvel Premiere through his own comic. And that Iron Fist comic has the first pairing of Chris Claremont and John Byrne. Believe it or not, they worked together before they were on the X-Men, and this was where they worked together. And it's much better than I remembered it, because I remembered it as kind of, I was really tired of the Kung Fu thing, so I didn't pick up a lot of it, and Byrne's art didn't wow me at the time. But when I went back and read it in one of the Essentials, he and Claremont really sort of found their sea legs on that series. And there's stuff that Claremont, of course, you know, used later on. The next omnibus that I got excited about was the Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale Yellow, White, Gray, and White omnibus, which tells early stories about Daredevil, Spider-Man, Hulk, and Captain America from the team that did the Long Halloween over at DC. Jeff Loeb is very, very dependent upon who he works with. And when he works with Tim Sale, his work is amazing. And when he works with some other artists, the work isn't as good. But I highly recommend the Yellow, Blue, Gray, and White omnibus. Marvel is reprinting the Wade and Waringo run on the Fantastic Four, which may be one of the best runs. Mark Waid really knew the characters, and Mike Waringo was one of my favorite artists through the 90s and until he passed. I found his work to be excellent. I found it to be incredibly entertaining, and I'm really looking forward to that omnibus. There is also the Fantastic Four Behold Galactus book, which is printed in what they call the monster size format, which means the book is about 3 feet tall. I have the Monsters Attack book, and when I ordered it, I didn't realize what they meant by monster size, and when I ordered it, it was funny because I ordered it from a place and they didn't send it with the regular books. And I said, well, where the heck is it? And they said, it comes in its own. You'll see why. And when I got it, here's this 3-foot-tall book that the art is blown up even bigger than the original art. So with the Behold Galactus stuff, that's Jack Kirby doing a Galactus story twice as big as a the Treasury size. So yeah, big old Jack Kirby book. I'm excited about that. The other book that's out in this that I had not picked up yet is Human Torch and the Thing, Strange Tales, the Complete Collection Trade Paperback. This reprints the run in Strange Tales. The Human Torch is a solo book. And then toward the end, because the sales were kind of weakening, they brought in the Thing, and it was really the Thing in the Human Torch. And that didn't save it, so eventually they, in 134 of Strange Tales, they did Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. But the stories have their own little goofy charm. They're very much aimed at kids. They don't really fit well with the Fantastic Four continuity in that Johnny Storm has a secret identity, whereas in the Fantastic Four, everybody knew he was the Human Torch. So it got a little weird. It got a little weird. There's all sorts of Venom stuff because of the Venom movie coming out, including an epic collection of, it's called the Venom Epic Collection, and it reprints Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 295 to 310, as well as all the crossover stuff. Again, it's Todd McFarlane, and then there's other Venom books that are put out, including a Venom Adventures Digest. And the Marvel Digest from Archie that month is also going to be highlighting Venom. So it's almost like he's got a movie coming out or something. And then as I flip through the rest of it, the last thing that I wanted to note were the Epic Collection, the Fist of Iron Fist, which is Marvel Premier 15 through 25, Iron Fist 1 through 15, and Marvel Team Up 63 and 64. And that is pretty much the complete run of Iron Fist before he became Power Man's partner. There is also a book, Iron Man 2020, which was a cool idea from the 80s and now really doesn't quite fit. But it started in the Machine Man miniseries, which was by Tom DeFalco. And it started by Herb Trimpe, but was later Barry Windsor Smith. So Barry Windsor Smith was very connected with Iron Man 2020. And it's, I don't know if this is going to hold up other than the Barry Windsor Smith art, to be honest with you. I haven't read that stuff in a long time. I remember that Iron Man 2020 was kind of a villain, and he's been used a couple of times since in Marvel books. But that's really it for Marvel over at DC. Again, they've got 15 different separate lines, one of which is ending. That's right, the Young Animal line is ending. As of the stuff for, what month is this for? September? Yeah, this is for September. So the Young Animal line is ending. It started off with really good sales, but it really, like a lot of separate lines, it kind of nosedived pretty fast. So sales-wise, it didn't live up to expectations after the first few. And they are now ending the line, but they say, you know, they might bring it back at some other time. Joe was very excited about Sandman Universe, which is a, basically the first issue comes out, and it's kind of a story that previews and lets you know what the four series in the Sandman Universe are going to be. And for me, I was excited that the Brian Michael Bendis creator-owned stuff is starting Pearl, which is by Bendis and Michael Gatos, who did the Jessica Jones and Alias series with him. And then Scarlet, which was a series he did over at Marvel, is starting up. But on both of these, I remember on Scarlet, I waited years between issues. So on both of these, it's wait for the trade. I'm waiting for the trade on them. There is a half ton of new DC number ones and other series like that. But I wanted to get back to the trade paperbacks again because that's kind of where we spend most of our time talking. There are tons of other comic podcasts that talk about the regular issues coming out. The first thing I wanted to point out is that they are reprinting the entire Bane series, which was after Superman died. It's okay, what are we going to do to Batman? Batman had his back broken and was replaced by a harsher version of the character, and they've got all four of the trade paperbacks here. There's Prelude to Nightfall, Nightfall Volume 1, Nightfall Volume 2, Night Quest the Crusade Volume 1, and then the new Bane 12-part series is collected here. It's by Chuck Dixon and Graham Nolan. The art by Graham Nolan is really good, and I've actually kind of been waiting for the trade on this one because I love Graham Nolan's art. Chuck Dixon, he's lost a few steps, and hopefully the work with Graham Nolan really elevates his stuff, because Chuck Dixon, again, it really depends on who he works with. If he's working with a good, solid artist, his stuff is really good. If he's working on his own, his stuff is very by the numbers, to where, you know, I've made the joke a whole bunch of times, he's got a computer program where he just, you know, puts in the city, puts in the name of the character, puts in the villain, and there you go, there's his script. There is a Before Watchmen omnibus. I won't be buying that. Was not impressed with the whole idea of Before Watchmen. It came out, and I have yet to hear anyone say that it was fantastic. I've yet to hear anyone say that it was, you know, oh, this is great stuff. I have picked up the Darwin Cook story, and it was okay. But I think you're dealing with the fact that you're trying to write around a story that had a beginning, middle, and end. And it's was not meant for sequels. It was not meant for prequels. It was just meant to be on its own. It was a standalone story. And I think DC's making a lot of mistakes by trying to build onto the standalone story. There is also the Impulse by Mark Waid and Umberto Ramos omnibus. I loved Impulse. I loved Mark Waid's run on Flash. This is just the Umberto Ramos stuff. So it is Impulse 1 through 27, Flash 108 to 111, and the Secret Origins 80-page giant story that told more about his origin. Impulse was a fun character. He was not meant to be serious. They added all this serious crap onto him later that I hope somebody strips away, because there are some characters who don't need to become dark and gritty and have darkness added to them. Impulse was a fun character. He was a kid who was, you know, kind of raised in video games, and it showed. And it was one of the truest young adult series DC was doing at the time, because Impulse acted like a teenage boy. There is also the House of Mystery Bronze Age Omnibus. I am not picking this up, even though I love those DC 70s, they didn't call them horror comics, they called them mystery comics, because DC was very scared of their stuff being called horror due to the Frederick Wortham stuff, so it was called mystery. And I've got all of these as showcases, so I don't need to buy, I don't like them enough to buy them again as an omnibus just to get them in color. But you've got some beautiful art by the Filipino artists that DC was using for a lot of their stuff back then, especially the anthology books. So if you have not read these, they're fun stories. I'm not going to say these are the greatest horror stories you've ever read, but they're solid stories with some really good art. And I know that when they came out with the showcases for House of Mystery and House of Secrets, they sold a lot better than DC thought they would. Let's see, what else was there that I was looking to jump on? Was there anything else that jumped out at me? Nope. That's it for DC. So they did not grab a lot of my money this month. And now we go to Previews, where Previews has reshuffled the premier publishers. The premier publishers are the publishers who get put in the front of previews. And in order to do that, they have to sell a certain percentage for a certain amount of time. They have never said this, but I would imagine they also have to put up a certain amount of money. But I know the Image, one of the reasons that Image expanded back in the 90s was because as their books started to sell lower and lower, they weren't going to hit that 5% market share threshold. Which, if you think about it, there was a point in the early 90s where Image was beating Marvel in market share. And then by the mid-90s, they were dropping so fast that they had to bring in other creator-owned stuff so that they can maintain at least that 5% market share. That's why they brought in Bone. That's why they brought in a whole bunch of series. And it really started the change from them being we're going to do a whole bunch of X-Men knockoff type books to now where Image is kind of the creator-owned home that they said they were going to be in the beginning. But normally, when you would pick up your previews, the first publisher would be Dark Horse, but now it's IDW. I'm sorry, now it's Image. So Image is now the first publisher in that. And one of the books that I wanted to point out was Little Donnie, Volume 1, by Mike Norton. Mike Norton has been doing a comic strip about President Trump for about a year, year and a half. And this book is a reprint of the first 125 strips. And if you are not a fan of Donald Trump, you will read this and you will laugh up uproariously, because Mike Norton is a very funny guy, and a lot of the stuff that he does that I read is where he's very serious. So I'm happy to see that he's putting this strip, which it almost felt like he and a few other artists, they just start doing these strips and then hope that they catch on and hope that they do well. I know it's available on Go Comics, but he pretty much just draws it, puts it up on Twitter and his Facebook page. So it's nice to get these collected. And for Image, there was one other book that both Joe and I pointed out, and that was Hey Kids, Comics! And you're thinking, well, what the hell's that? What it is, it's a book by Howard Chaykin. And he is talking about his life and his career in comics. And he has said on his Facebook page a number of times, he's not doing this to burn bridges. He's not doing this to cause trouble. He's doing this because he wants to tell his story, and it's going to be told in a regular comic book. So he's not burning the bridges. But he is going to talk about the artists and writers, the con men and clowns, the Gannis and gangsters, creating the foundation of today's biggest entertainment business, or at least as the tale that wagged the dog. Some of it really happened, and the names here have been changed to protect the innocent and the guilty. And Howard Chaykin, when he starts talking stories about early comics, boy, the guy knows where the guy, as they say, knows where the bodies are buried. He started work with Neil Adams. He did work with Wally Wood, and he's been around the comic industry for, you know, since the 70s. There is also a new Grant Morrison. That was really the only favorite comics of the last 20 years, and written by Ann Nesenti, who's written a lot of comics that I really enjoy. And having them work together, I am all over this. I am all over this. It's a four-issue series, so it's going to be collected as a trade, and we'll see if I can wait until the trade actually comes out. I don't know if I can or not. The next book that jumps out at me is Yoshitaka Amano, the illustrated biography. Yoshitaka Amano has only done one comic that most people would know of, and that is the hardcover that then was a trade paperback of The Dream Hunters, which was a Sandman original story by Neil Gaiman that was done as a graphic novel. It wasn't done as a regular comic, it was a graphic novel. And Amano drew the art, and it was beautiful. But most people know his art from his time working on Final Fantasy. He did character designs on Final Fantasy 6 and 7. He may have done character designs on other ones, but those are the ones that he's mostly known for. And it's the one that I know for. There is also a Blu-ray with 3 hours of discussion and commentary. He's done a lot of character design. And sadly, I told the story of how I met him. He was in town when Dream Hunters came out. And it was there was a signing at Dreamhaven, because this was back when Neil Gaiman could actually do signings at Dreamhaven. So he was doing a signing at Dreamhaven, and everybody was in line, and they bought the book, and it was a lot of Neil Gaiman fans. But for me, I wanted to get the book signed, and I wanted that, but I also wanted that. I brought in my jewel case for Final Fantasy VI and VII. Because he had designed the characters for that. I loved Final Fantasy VII. Absolutely loved that. So I brought in my jewel case. And the woman I was dating at the time she was the one who got me hooked on Final Fantasy VII. So I bought another copy of Final Fantasy VII. This was before Final Fantasy VII. You had to pay a couple hundred dollars to get it. And got him to sign it for her, too. And then a month later, she sold it. But still, I was able to get my Final Fantasy VII signed by Yoshitaka Amano, and I'm going to be buying that book. I cannot wait to buy that book. Very, very excited about it. Trying to see if there was anything else that jumped out at us about Dark Horse. For me, it was Beasts of Burden, which is the comic that in the past has been done by Evan Dorkin and Jill Thompson. Well, Jill Thompson's not working on it now. It's Benjamin Dewey, and this is Evan Dorkin telling the story about a heroic pack of canines known as the Wise Dogs. And if you've read the first Beasts of Burden, you know that this is a fantastic, fantastic comic. This will probably be just as good. I can't wait to pick it up. Again, I don't know if I'll be able to wait for the trade. I'm going to try, and the trade paperback is available. So, if you have not read Beasts of Burden, it's a fantastic comic. Evan Dorkin often says that this is the book he does when he feels good about things, and Milk and Cheese is when he is pissed off about things. And he hasn't done a Milk and Cheese strip in a long, long time. And the only other thing that I want to point out is that they are continuing the EC Archives. They have now gotten to the final volume of Haunt of Fear. And if you have not read these, you should pick up these EC volumes, because these archives they're not as good as the hardcovers that was put out by Russ Cochran, but this is the only way to really enjoy these EC stories. And EC, I don't need to go on and on, phenomenal. And there's a reason the EC comics are legendary. When we get to IDW, which is next, a lot of the books, again, are TV tie-ins. And I'm looking through to see if there was anything that jumped out at me. there's a new Bloom County book that Joe was excited about that reprints another year's worth of strips. It's called Bloom County, Best Read on the Throne. For me, the thing that jumped out was the Frankenstein Alive, the complete collection. This reprints the Frankenstein series that was done by Bernie Wrightson. It's the last thing that he worked on and was finished by Kelly Jones, who was personally picked by Bernie Wrightson to complete it. It's a hardcover, 104 pages, $24.99. And if you have seen the Bernie Wrightson Facebook page, or you've seen some of the art from this, the artwork is unbelievably detailed. Wrightson, this was a labor of love. He loved the Frankenstein story. He'd been drawing Frankenstein for his whole life, really. And this Frankenstein Alive was the last thing he did. The artwork is off the charts phenomenally good. So, I could not recommend it enough. Could not recommend it enough. And that was it for IDW. For, Dynamite. There wasn't much that jumped out at either of us about Dynamite. Dynamite, again, they do a lot of TV tie-in books. They do a lot of, they basically do licensed books. So if you like the licensed books, there they are. When it gets to Boom, there was one book that I pointed out, and that is Lumberjanes, The Infernal Compass, which is the first original graphic novel by the Lumberjanes creators. It's I'm really looking forward to it. I like Lumberjanes. It's a book that not only I like, but I have friends who don't read comics who are into Lumberjanes. So I'm very excited about that book. I'm trying to see if there was anything else that jumped out at us. Joe is a fan of the Thrilling Adventure Hour, which is a podcast and stage show, and they've got a second issue out. But really, a lot, again, you know, they do a lot of tie-in books. And, we did have a discussion about one of the books, and that is the Peanuts Dell Archive. And it says here that it's written and illustrated by Charles M. Schulz, covered by Charles M. Schulz. And it says in 1955, Charles M. Schulz began a partnership with Dell Publishing, and for the first time, all new Peanut stories were created outside of Schulz's daily comic strip. Boom Studios and the Charles M. Schulz Museum come together to collect these classic tales in a definitive hardcover edition. It's 352 pages for $25, which, that's really cheap for a reprint. So I'm thinking that this is going to be out on regular bookstore shelves. They're going to push it there. One of the things that Joe and I discussed is that not all of these stories were by Charles M. Schulz. Schulz did some of them, but he also had people who worked on them through Dell or through his studio. And one of the things I'm hoping is that when this book comes out, they will give credit to those people, because even back then, everything was signed by Schulz, even if Schulz didn't draw it. And it's one of the few Peanuts things that Schulz himself did not draw. So, I'm also a little kind of wondering why this didn't come out through Fantagraphic, since they're reprinting all the Peanuts comic strips. But good for Boom that they were able to do this. And I'm looking forward to these, because I remember reading a few of the Peanuts comic books as a kid that were floating around my grandparents' house. And they captured the idea of the strip and told longer form stories. The other thing is that Boom did print the Peanuts comic book that would have Schulz stories and then stories by new creators. So maybe that's why they got it. But still, I'm looking forward to that book. Then we get to the rest of previews. And the rest of previews is, boy, there's a whole lot there. First, I want to point out that the Cerebus gets a first issue every month, and for this month, the Cerebus first issue is Nick Calm, Agent of Codpiece, number one. This reprints the Cerebus strips that Dave Sim is doing online, where he actually takes classic backgrounds from Dante's Inferno and drawings of Cerebus to make humorous, little four-panel strips. What I've heard is that Dave can't draw anymore, so that's why he's doing it this way, or he would be doing regular Cerebus strips. Still, I'm enjoying it. I'm picking it up every month. It's one of those where I can dip in and dip out. I don't need to read, I don't need to keep up on it, because it's just, there are some stories that go through, but mostly it's just gag-a-day strips. Over in Archie, want to point out that the Archie Comics Digest number 8 is about Venom. Of course, it doesn't tell you what stories will be in it, but in the past, it's been some classic Silver Age stuff, some Modern Age stuff, and then some of the Marvel Kids line that they did for a while. And I've got them all. They're great little books. They're a lot of fun to read. Gosh, the Thanos one reprints the two-parter that ended the Thanos story in the 70s of Avengers Annual number 7 and Marvel 2-in-1 Annual number 2. So, the other thing about Archie that I wanted to point out was they are reprinting Betty and Veronica Spectacular, which will be reprinting the Betty and Veronica Spectacular comic in chronological order in a magazine format series, 224 pages for $11. And then they're also reprinting the old Life with Archie comic in that same format, 224 pages for $11. The original Life with Archie was home to the wildest alternate reality takes on the Riverdale gang. From spies to superheroes, this comic showcased stories readers never dreamed of. I remember reading some of these in the 70s, and it was, okay, here's the Archie gang as spies. Here's the Archie gang as... You know, they did a lot of adventure comics, kind of like how Richie Rich had mystery comics. Still drawn and done in the traditional Archie style, or, you know, for the Richie Rich stuff, it was still drawn like a regular Archie comic. Like Archie comic. Like a regular Richie Rich comic. Normally, I jump to the Fantagraphics stuff, but Fantagraphics did not have anything that jumped out at me this month. Which, there's, you know, some Disney stuff by not Carl Barks, and nothing there jumped out at me. Sorry. I ordered the Knights of the Dinner Table, and then right above that is a new Donald Trump comic. And I've said it before, but please stop with these Trump parody comics. Please. None of them are funny. None of them are done very well. And every comic shop I go to, I'll ask them, you know, are they selling? And they go, no, not interested. So you're kind of, I don't know who's buying them. But it's certainly not local shops here in the Twin Cities. They've kind of said that they're done with the Trump parody comics. They're not going to be picking up any more of them. Lion's Forge is printing a book that reprints Jane's World. Jane's World was a trailblazing comic strip about a young lesbian woman making her clumsy way in the world and the friends who help and hinder her along her journey. It was the first syndicated comic strip with a lesbian main character, and it appeared in many newspaper markets here in the Twin Cities. I remember it being in the City Reader? It was in the City Reader. We had two at the time. We had the Twin Cities Reader and the City Pages, and it was in the Twin City Reader, which is the one that got swallowed up by City Pages, which has since been swallowed up by the daily newspaper, the Star Tribune. So not really an alternate paper anymore. But it was a very well done series. I didn't, you know, there were huge gaps because, you know, you, with the free papers, you couldn't find them all the time. This reprints some of the best strips and also has letters that were written to the strip itself. And this was during a time when coming out of the closet was still kind of, you didn't do it. So both Joe and I talked about how we're interested in that. And then flipping through, I think the next thing that we got to was Titan Comics, which has really become something that I'm excited about. They have a new hard case crime book called The Prague Coup, where an author, Graham Greene, finds himself in the middle of an intricate plot to unseat the Czech government in an explosive event remembered as the Prague Coup. And it's set against the backdrop of Orson Welles' Third Man. And I like stories that weave in and out of classic works. One of my favorite plays in the world is a play called Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. And that play is what happens to the characters Rosencrantz and Guildenstern when they're not kind of on stage in Hamlet. And this looks to be kind of the same thing. I'm really excited about it, and it is coming out as a hardcover? Yep, a full hardcover. They're also doing an adaptation of The Girl Who Danced with Death, which is the fourth book in the Lisbeth Salander series. The first three were all by Stieg Larsson, who passed away. This is the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest, and The girl who I don't remember the name of the third one because the third one didn't impress me as much. But The Girl Who Danced with Death was written by a writer picked out by the family to continue the story, which is, I don't want to get into it too detailed, but Stieg Larsson did not have a lot to do with his family. He was living with a woman for over 20 years, and she has the mostly completed manuscript for the fourth novel. But because they weren't married, and because Stig Larsson didn't update his information, the family has the rights to the Salander, the Elizabeth Salander book, so they're going to be doing them. I have not read this book yet. I have it on my Kindle to read at some point. But this is a adaptation. This is really the first adaptation from Hard Case Crime of the Elizabeth Salander book that hasn't already been adapted, because all three books were adapted over at Vertigo, and then they came over to Titan Books, and they were adapted again. And I actually like the Vertigo adaptations better, because they were longer and they were able to let things breathe. This is a three-issue series that's doing an adaptation of a book that's around 600 pages, so be warned. There is the trade paperback of the first arc on the series The Prisoner. Joe and I both love the TV series The Prisoner. I picked up the first issue of this comic and was not impressed, because it really was kind of a retelling of the origin of The Prisoner from the 1967 series, just stretched out longer. There weren't enough changes to make me go, oh, this will be a new story. No, it was just kind of the same thing. And rather than continuing the story or creating a new mystery, it's, oh, we're just going to do it again. And that doesn't really work out well. Ask the Star Wars people. Joe was excited about the autobiography of Jean-Luc Picard, which is a book that will be about, you know, exactly what it says. It's the autobiography of the character Jean-Luc Picard. I have not heard enough about it to get excited about it. We both were excited about the stuff coming out from Tomorrow's Publishing. There's a new issue, a back issue coming out that will be about Aquaman. Quiet. There is a Mike Grell book coming out. It's Mike Grell, Life is Drawing Without an Eraser. It's listed as a staff pick, and I am picking this bad boy up. I may even get the hardcover, you know, the limited hardcover that's got a signature, because I am a huge Mike Grell fan. I wish he was doing more comics. His stuff on the Legion of Superheroes was kind of where he made his name, but for me, Warlord is where I first read his stuff, and then when he went over to First Comics and did John Sable Freelance, it's where I fell in love with his stuff. John Sable Freelance was an amazing comic in the 80s. It's about a mercenary who's kind of, his civilian identity is as someone who draws children's books. It was very well done, a great action-adventure comic, and then he went on to do the best run of Green Arrow, starting with the Longbow Hunters, and then he did a regular Green Arrow series that I don't think anyone has come close to. He did Green Arrow as a character in his 40s who'd been doing this for a while, and he made it more realistic. He made it more compelling because Green Lantern was older. He'd made mistakes in his life, and they're catching up with him. His relationship to Black Canary was messy and felt real. And they were... It's why I really like the Green Arrow-Black Canary relationship. And since then, they've kind of made Green Arrow much more simple, much less interesting. Nothing tops those... The run, especially when he drew it, and then I think Dan Jurgens came in and drew it for a while as well. But man, Mike Grell just blew me away on that book. Absolutely loved it. The other thing that I pointed out was that they are doing a new printing of the American Comic Book Chronicles, the 80s. That's the one that has sold out. The American Comic Book Chronicles is a book series by Tomorrow's where they tell what happened in comics during that decade. There's one for the 50s by Bill Shelley, who I'll be interviewing in 2 days. You'll get that interview. They did two volumes on the 60s, a volume on the 70s. I'm really looking forward to this volume on the 80s, and then the volume on the 90s is coming out within a month or two. But if you're into comics history, and if you're listening to this, I would think you would be, this series goes through, they talk about what was going on at different publishers, what the market was like, what the culture around the market was like, and they put things in perspective so that you understand not just when the comic came out, but what was the world around it and how did that comic fit in? Excellent, excellent stuff. And really, that was the end of previews. You know, yes, there's the manga stuff. Joe pointed out, and I didn't realize it was going to be available in previews, that there is a version of Shinsuke Nakamura's biography, kind of an autobiography, I guess, because he did write the Japanese version, that Viz is translating and selling here in the U.S. I did not know it was coming out through previews, because I already ordered it from Amazon. I'm a huge Shinsuke Nakamura fan. It's his autobiography from Japan. They're just translating it, which means that they're not... It's from before he came to the WWE. So it talks about his time in mixed martial arts, talks about his time in New Japan, talks about why he is called the King of Strong Style. So look forward to that if you're a wrestling fan. Pick up this book and then kind of hopefully it'll wash that bad taste of what WWE is doing to Shinsuke Nakamura out of your mouth. Well, I've talked for long enough. You know who needs to talk now? Okay, again, it's me. But I'm talking about these guys, our sponsors. That's right, here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we have ads. And our first sponsor is me. That's right, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. I have my first book out with Dangerous Dan Moore. It's the first 100 strips of our online web strip, Worldwide News, the story of the lowest-rated cable news network. And you can get yourself a copy with commentary, with all sorts of extras, with signatures and everything. Just email Dan over at lordshadowflame@gmail.com. Our top sponsor, who's been with us since day one, is DreamHost. DreamHost.com. You need yourself a website, and DreamHost.com is the number one web host in the whole known universe. Just head over to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, get $20 off your first year. How can you beat that? Our other sponsor is Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.com. Healthy snacks for a healthy lifestyle. Just head over to Graze, put in the code CORYS3R5P. Your first and fifth box are free. You can get them weekly. You can get them bi-weekly. You can get them monthly. You just order a whole bunch of them. It's great stuff to keep you away from the vending machine at work. Now, if you would like to leave a comment for any of the podcasts that we do, we'd love those. Go ahead and email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, or you can call 952-856-0519. Operators are standing by. Okay, it's just a place that we'll record your calls, but we'll play them on the air. We'll answer your questions. We love getting feedback. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Suggest a topic. Be a guest. Send us your stuff. SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. If you would like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose radio shows, you can. Just email us at SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. Subject, advertising. Thanks. And after the sponsors, we talk about what's going on the other podcasts. And normally I would drop something in, but now I'm going to tell you. I've been a little late with bad advice. I was supposed to have it up over the weekend, but I worked all weekend, and we talked about how the website's not happy with me. So Bad Advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com comes out tomorrow with me, Dan Moore, and Wolfie B. Bad giving you bad advice. On Wednesday, there is a new episode of Solitaire Rose Radio, which I look back and I haven't done kind of anything but interviews for a while. So I need to change that. I need to do some Solitaire Rose Radio episodes. But I've got an interview with Bill Shelley talking about his book Sense of Wonder, where he talks about early fandom in the 60s and printing fanzines and how he went away from comics and how he came back. And I cannot recommend his book enough. And after you've listened to his interview, I hope that you'll be excited about reading his book as well. Then on Friday is a new episode of Novelcast. It's the second part of the novel Graceland, which is part of my After the Fall series, which is about what happens 5 years after civilization has fallen due to a zombie apocalypse. Second part, so you could go back. You could go to novels.solitairerose.com and you can listen to the first part. And then Joe would talk about what's going on the eBays. He's not here. Although he did talk about me.
It's true. Did you know Corey can write the Lord's Prayer on the head of a pin? Did you know Corey was once accused of being a 90-year-old lesbian axe murderer with persistency toward procrastination and sloth? Did you know Corey really doesn't like pie? He's really more of a cupcake man. I prefer muffins.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where it's almost 95 degrees in the house because I was gone all weekend and didn't have the air conditioning on. No, it's a freaking a geeking. Joe has his freaking right here.
Did you buy a new computer?
Nope, just got rid of the old mandatory updates that fucked up the old one.
Ah.
I did get a new printer, though, so.
I got a printer a long time ago. It's just black and white. And I don't use it that much. But it was the best $90 I ever spent.
You'd be surprised what you can get for 90 bucks now.
Well, it's a nice big professional grade inkjet. And it's, you know, $90 because A, it was on Amazon, and B, it's not color. I have
Whose is it? It's what brand?
Brother.
Brother's actually pretty reliable. The problem, I'll talk about it, I suppose, later, but one of the problems with inkjet printers is they need air. They have, like, little air holes in them, and if you don't use them regularly, they clog up, and you wouldn't believe the frickin' instructions to try to clean them. I mean, I have no doubt there's people who have, like, nothing else to do in their fucking life than to clean inkjet printers, but I'm like, you know what, fuck that. As Chris reminded me, we got 5 years out of the one I had. It still works as a scanner, which is fine for me for eBay, because the new one I got that, although it scans, it doesn't have any, it just scans. It doesn't have any real settings other than do you want email, PDF, or JPEG. The other one allows you to change, you know, do you want to scan black and white? Do you want to scan color? Do you want to adjust the resolution, things like that? So, although I do finally have it set up so it just directly sends it into my computer, which was fun because then it's like, okay, I know it sent the picture I just scanned into my computer. Where the fuck did it put it? So,
where is it?
After 3 more scans and noticing, hey, that file's increasing in size, I figured out where it was going.
Oh, well, that's good.
So, but again, it doesn't have the automatic, I don't know what you call it, where it goes to the edge of what you're scanning instead of just, here's your whole thing. You crop and scan it. So, but as a printer, it works out really well.
Yeah, mine was, it's one that they kept recommending on Lifehacker. And it's finally, you know, I had an old, you know, all-in-one, and it needed ink. So I buy ink, and I put in the new ink cartridge. Nothing. You did it, nothing. Clean this, okay? Nothing. Run this diagnostic. Nothing.
Yeah, run this. Do this. That. And you know what they don't tell you is every time you run the cleaning cycle, it uses ink.
It wasn't. So, that was the thing, though. I would have loved if it used the ink. Nope.
No, it does. It
two uses new ink cartridges,
ink.
And it said, sorry, there's no ink. Nope, they're brand new. No ink.
Well, what happened is, and this is what I found out as I was going through it, the more cleaning cycles you do, it uses the ink, but it's like having a wet sponge and putting more water in it in order to dry it out. It just doesn't work. Because I had that same problem. The first thing I did, okay, fine. I tried to use I used a pirate cartridge. Ooh.
How dare you?
And I know everything gets all freaky. Oh my God, you're using a pirate cartridge. Shame on you. So I went out and got a real one and I put it in it and it said, you're using a pirate cartridge. I said, no, I'm not. And then it didn't do anything. And then you start reading through more things. Well, you know, you really should replace cartridges when they say replace them instead of just running them all the way until it says it's totally out. Because then what happens is this constant flow of ink, if it gets a little air inside that creates a clog. Well, here's how you clean the clog. And I'm like, no, I already avoided that with the first one. And I'm like, fuck it. I'll just go buy a new one. And Chris found one at Target for about $80.
But no, mine's professional grade, blah, 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 $90. Oh, it doesn't print color. I don't need to print color.
Yeah, I could use one that's not color. And just black and white. I mean, that's really all I do are my eBay stuff.
Yep, for me, it was like, oh, it prints immediately with no problems. The other one, I mean, every time I wanted to print, it's like, okay, I have to update the driver, and I have to do this, and I have to take care of that. And then there's this, and it's, plug a USB port. Oh, hi, how are you? I'm ready to print. There you go.
Yeah, I'm hoping that's the way with this one, because the other one, too, I think it was just age, because it was like, every time I turn it on, it'd say, you're not online. I said, well, printer's on, I'm on, the Wi-Fi is working. So I'd have to reboot the computer, and all of a sudden, miraculously, it's online.
Now, this one supposedly has Bluetooth, but I've never been able to get it to Bluetooth. So
yeah, I couldn't get my old one. But I don't Bluetooth. Sometimes Dana and Chris or even Holly might want to, because they'll have something on their phone they want to print. So anyways, it's available if they want to set it up. I was just happy I didn't have to replace the computer, because I hadn't gotten a chance to really back up most of the stuff I want. And it's like, you know what? I'm going to restore it to morning, and it seemed to work fine.
And my freaking is that the end is nigh. No, that doesn't mean the podcast is ending. But at the group home, they have announced the dates where the first of the residents will be moving into their own homes. They're going to be moving into 2- and 4-bedroom homes, and they finally, you know, they've been talking about it since the first of the year. Well, the first move in is the first week of August. Four of the clients will be moving into a house, and then they've bought other houses around the area. So there's really kind of a where are we going, what are we doing. Staff are leaving because they may not want to work in facilities like that, or they're worried about change. So it's one of the reasons why I've been at work all the time. People are leaving. And I am also grabbing these shifts because this won't last forever. I've worked at group homes where, you know, they announce change and then people start heading for the door. The first group home I worked at, I remember, you know, they were having trouble hiring people. And then in August of 1996, do you remember 96? Oh, it was a long time ago. It was a beautiful time. The Simpsons were on TV. They were on the same night as America's Funniest Home Videos. And, oh, wait, they still are. But the owner announced that he announced in early August, he let us all know via letter that they would be shutting down at the end of October. And within 2 weeks, there were all the staff had left at the facility I was working at, except for another gentleman who, all I remember about him is he was older, had to be in his 50s or 60s, and now I think, oh, well, that's not that old. But he had a computer chess game, where you actually, you would turn it on and you would make your moves by pulling the chess piece out, and there were little holes, and you would put the chess piece in that hole, and then the computer would register it and say, oh, okay, I move here. And he loved chess. He played chess all the time. But pretty soon it was just him and I. So he would work during the day and I would come in the evening, and we would trade off the weekends. And by the time that group home ended, I had enough money that I paid off my car and went to New Orleans for a week. So I'm kind of doing the same thing here, where it's, oh, you want me to sleep there? You want me to, yeah, I'll come in. I'll do it, because it's not going to last. I have no idea where they are going to be putting me, but we were actually talking about it this weekend, and we all said it's probably going to be like it is now, except, you know, rather than just coming here and going from cottage 1 to cottage 2 to cottage 3, it's like, okay, I need you to work in the Victoria cottage, you know, the Victoria house for the 3 hours, and then drive to the Chaska house for an hour, and then drive over to, you know, the house in St. Louis Park for 4 hours. So, but there's a lot of change going on, and it's hard for the clients, and it's not really easy for me either. Because, yes, I'm taking all these shifts, and at the full-time job, they've cut a lot. Well, a lot of people have been leaving, so I've been putting in overtime there. So, the hardest working man in podcasting, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, come on, I'm putting together this podcast, even though everything fell apart. Geeking! Joe doesn't have a geeking. I have geeking, and first one is that I really only have two.
And the first is that I started watching the Legion series on FX. It's available on Hulu. Yes, it's Hulu, because I have Hulu, and I've got Amazon, and I've got Netflix. And, Legion was a character in the New Mutants. He was Charles Xavier's son, and he was crazy, and he could alter reality with his mind. And when they announced that they were going to do a series, I was like, well, that's kind of odd. And now I finally had time to watch the first three episodes, and it's really odd. Beautiful to look at. Very weird. Reality, you know, after the first couple episodes, I don't know what reality to trust. When a scene begins, it's interesting, but you don't know if it's actually happening or if it's in his mind or something else. But it's very trippy, very well done, and I wish I had more time to watch it. If you don't mind your entertainment being weird, David Lynch-style weird, Legion is a fantastic series. The other geeking I have is I got all caught up on the comic Paper Girls, which is by Brian K. Vaughan and Chris Chang at Image. We reviewed the first trade paperback, which had the first five issues, a couple of years ago, and now they're up to issue 20, and I actually sat down and got all caught up, and the first issue was about what seemed like a weird sort of alien-slash-time invasion. 20 issues in, the characters are bouncing around in time. They've learned secrets and both good and bad things about their futures, and they have gone back to prehistoric time, they've gone into the future, they've gone to the year 2000, and it's wonderful. It's just a wonderful book. It's there's nothing in it that a teenager couldn't read, but it feels mature. The characters are only like 13, 14 years old, so they act like, and that's the thing I like, they act like 13 or 14 year old girls. They don't act like adults that are, you know, teenagers. Nope, they act like 13 and 14 year old girls dealing with the fact that they are bouncing around in time and everything has gone crazy around them. Brian K. Vaughan also does Saga. In the past, he did Runaways, he did Ex Machina. Why the Last Man. I love Brian K. Vaughan's stuff, and I'm glad that he's over at Image, sort of just doing his own stuff, doing creator-owned stuff. It's a highly recommended book. I recommend it very, very highly. So there you go, kids. I have been able to cobble together an episode from the bits and pieces we have, and hopefully next week's episode will not be me blathering on for 90 minutes about funny books. But if it is, yeah, sorry. I want to thank you for listening. As we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. And since I'm the only one here, I'm going to hit my music.
I'm the greatest!